Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Michigan Avenue Media. A good story is a good story. Hosted by Marsha Casper Cook. Live shows every week with interesting interviews in the entertainment field with writers, producers, directors, and screenwriters. There's also shows about newsworthy topics and group discussions about writing tips to help writers reach success. New to the show are conversations about personal struggles and how to feel good about yourself in today's world. One thing's for sure, it's always a lively conversation and lots of fun. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, everybody. It's Marsha. I just wanted, we have a great show today. First, we'll just say who the guest is. It's Jeff Fleischer, and we're going to be talking about elections and his new book. But before this, I want to say I'm so sorry we didn't have a show last week. There was Blog Talk. These are live shows, and Blog Talk was having an issue. And so thousands of shows were not on the last few days of last week. So we're hoping everything is okay today, and I think everything is fine because I've heard Fran Lewis's show, so it was okay. So then we've both been watching this continuously, you know, is what's happening here. But it's live. So now, anyway, so thank you for understanding. And Amy will be on tomorrow, and we'll be talking about Hollywood and her books. And that's always fun with Amy. Okay, so let's see here. This is going to be a very interesting conversation because I know this person well, and for all of you that love my writing, this is the person that edits for me. He makes my words look so much better, and if he sits with a red pencil or he knocks things off on, you know, he takes this off and that off, I don't say much anymore because I know he's doing it for my own good. And especially when you think everything you've sent and you've finished your book and it's really good and there's no problems and then it comes back. But Jeff already knows me. We've done this for so – I don't even know how many years. It's a long time, as long as I've been writing books. Yeah. It's a long time. So it's over 20 years, but that's dating us a little, but not giving away our age. Right. So I'm going to let Jeff tell you a little bit about himself. And, you know, he's really, you know, worked on these books. This is, you know, the third one, right? This is the third one?
Third edition of this book, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, so tell everybody about yourself and how you came to write this book, you know, this series.
Oh, sure. I'm Jeff Fleischer. I'm a Chicago-based author, journalist, and editor. The newest book is Votes of Confidence, The Young Person's Guide to American Elections, the third edition. This came out March 5th. The first edition was 2016. It did well enough that we decided to make an updated version for 2020. That came out like a week before everyone, actually the same week everything shut down for COVID. And then for this election, we did a new 2024 edition. So like I said, just came out March 5th. It's available really anywhere you buy books. And the original idea for the 2016 edition was, like, I used to work as a political reporter. I've written for a bunch of different magazines. I've worked abroad. And I've covered other stuff, too, like sports, entertainment, and whatnot. But just in talking to people covering events, like, how much I realized people just didn't know about the system. And so they knew, like, how presidential elections work. But then the 2000 election, when things came down to the Electoral College, a lot of people were confused by that or didn't know what was going on. And so just in thinking about that and thinking some of the bigger issues that people like may not be familiar with, whether it was the compromises that created the Constitution or whether it was state and local levels of elections or how the House works, how the Senate works, what they do differently, how courts are appointed or elected in different parts of the country. Like, I just figured it'd be a good idea to have like a primer book aimed at young audiences, so high school and up, but realistically it's also a lot of adults.
Yes.
Because that's kind of how the 2016 edition came
about. It's definitely for adults. It's definitely because we don't always remember what we learned, but once we're reading it, we go, oh, I knew that. I learned that. But you forget it, you know, and you have it down in a way that people can understand it and it's not complicated.
It is the kind of way to have a non-textbook textbook.
Right. Because
it's the material you would cover in a textbook but doesn't read like a textbook.
Right, exactly. It does. And it's really a fast read because it's very interesting. There's no downtime because it's all facts and figures, and it's also, you know, just stating the way it is. And we all, any of the adults that will be reading this know we learn this, but we just need to refresh our memory. And this is really a good book for that because it really covers everything. That's what, you know, I mean, yeah, no, it is good. And, you know, and the fact is people will, you know, I think that a lot of times people say, oh, you know, they just think they go in and vote, but there's so much more to it. So when you go out, what kind of question? I have a lot of, I did write questions for this because I really think there's so many things that are so important, you know. Let's just do one thing first. How important is voting? I think it's so important, and I know I hear people say they're not going to vote, and I remember going out the first time I could vote and then getting a little sticker, and I was so excited I was going to vote. But that is not the way it is now. People go like, well, I don't know if I'm going to vote. How important is it? This is
critical.
Really something.
Yeah, and I was a kid, too, who was really excited about it. Couldn't wait to, like, register. Couldn't wait to, like, show up the first time, vote in my first primary, vote in my first general election. But I was also a kid who was really interested in this material even way before I could vote. There's a story I told in the old editions, which isn't in this edition anymore because it's just aged out. But I remember getting, like, Weekly Reader when I was 7 years old. That showed like all the candidates were running the Republican primary and all the candidates were running the Democratic primary on one page, the other on the other page, and like little bios of all these people. And a lot of them like didn't get very far, but it was interesting to like learn about all these possible people and find like there was something I really liked who didn't go very far, but I got to also like follow their careers and see them pop up later as a cabinet secretary or a senator, and like really getting to learn who people were and what the differences were between them. And like that's critical. And primaries are critical too. And I think a lot of people kind of take those off and just wait for a general election. But, of course, primaries are how you're deciding who runs in the general election.
Yeah.
And also, like, not just the presidential election. Like, so often, like, people nationally will focus on the presidential election. That makes sense because it's the one everybody can vote in. But, like, your mayor is important. Your school board's important. Your governor is really important. Your congressman. And so it's, like, figuring out all those different races. Even if you're in a state where, like, the presidential election isn't competitive, those races might be. So, like, you may not have much of a say if you're, like, a Republican voter in Vermont, your Democratic voter in Wyoming, but you may be able to have a lot of impact on who your school board is.
Yes, you know, and I think that's one thing that people don't, you know, especially when their children are out of school. They care a lot more when their children are in school. And then when their children have graduated, they just don't, you know, they're not as involved as they were, you know. And I think that's, you know, there's so many things that change in life. And, you know, when a kid goes to college or, you know, right before those 4 years of high school, as you know, they go so fast, you know, and you were on the school paper along with my son. And that was really, I think, the paper won so many awards. And I think that was such a good start in your career is to learn all about that. Yeah, because it was a big thing. You know, I don't know about now what they do, but I think it was a huge thing when you graduated because you were on something that was really important and really was award-winning.
Yes. And there's still a lot of really good high school newspapers. A lot of them are now online instead of being print.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of people who are, like, who are doing the work and learning how to interview people, how to evaluate information, not just, you know, your source said X. Well, is what the source said true or not?
And,
like,
and you have a lot of a lot of that in your book, you know, where you got all your articles and, you know, which is very good because sometimes you go, well, I wonder how he learned that or where he found that out. But you have that all in the book. And so if they wanted to hear more about whatever the subject it was, you can look at the back of the book and find out where you can, you know, where they can look at, you know, and see what's going on because people don't even go to the library. You know, I myself do not go to the library and I'm rethinking that I think I should go because when I used to go to the library, my brain was much better as far as writing because I was just sitting there not thinking of anything else. Just, you know, and if I for a minute didn't know what I was going to write, I would just kind of read somebody else's book and it just got me into it really helped me get into the mode of writing. And it had nothing to do with whatever I was reading. But I think that's another thing. People don't go to libraries, you know. And you speak a lot at different places. You know, COVID naturally hindered a lot. So, what age group do you speak for a lot of times?
I'm usually doing high school classrooms. But sometimes I'll also do just like bookstores where it'll be anyone who wants to come. So it'll be like, you know, friends and coworkers and also like – But also, at those events, too, I'll have high school students who will come in and have questions, or parents of high school students who want to learn more. But I also do a lot of, zooming into a classroom or going to a classroom and taking questions from high school students and seeing, what their concerns are, what questions they have, because they're the ones who are, about to be able to vote. And so both with this book and with other books I've done, a lot of the high school audience is a big part of the audience.
I do think one thing that I would like to talk about is electoral college.
Okay.
Because everybody, we all know what it is, but we all just go, what really is it? And why does it affect, and it does affect the election. It's a huge part of what happens here. So can you explain that? Because I think most of us know the electoral, but we really don't know exactly. But it does have a bearing on our elections, extreme bearing.
Oh, sure. So essentially, every state has a certain number of electoral votes, and it's the same number as the number of senators and representatives in Congress that state has. And then Washington, D.C. also has the same as any of the small states. So they're the equivalent of three votes. And by totaling those votes up, you have to be able to get a majority to be the president, which is 270 votes. You have 270 electoral votes, you win the election. And you can cobble that together in different formulas depending on where the states are. And so in many elections, the Electoral College hasn't really mattered because someone who's winning a lot of the popular vote is also just naturally winning a lot of the electoral vote. So if you look at Electoral College map from 1964 between Lyndon Johnson and Barry Goldwater, Johnson wins almost every state. Or if you look at Ronald Reagan against Walter Mondale in 1984, Reagan wins almost every state. So you'll see these maps where it's almost all one color and a few exceptions. Nixon McGovern would be another one. So in those cases, we didn't talk a lot about the Electoral College because it didn't really matter in those elections. And there have been elections
now
in the past where it did matter.
Now it comes up constantly.
Yeah, between 2000, 2016, 2020. Well, sorry, 2020 and 2016, the loser of the Electoral College won the election. And then in 2020, there was a lot of focus on it because it happened just 4 years earlier.
Yeah. And that they don't seem to, it does matter. So, why do you think that they, I've heard people say, oh, let's just get rid of the Electoral College. But I think this is that impossible to do?
It's basically impossible to do. A lot of people want to do it. The majority of Americans want to get rid of it. Poll after poll for years has always shown Americans either really want to get rid of it or are okay with getting rid of it. But the problem is it gives some small states so much power that it needs to be a constitutional amendment to get rid of it. So you need not just a majority, but a supermajority of states to agree. And so Montana or North Dakota or South Dakota, Wyoming, Idaho, they're never going to vote to get rid of the Electoral College. And so right off the bat, the number of states that won't do it, it's basically going to be with us to stay. Unless we hit a point in the future where it isn't a factor anymore, and then maybe there will be an opportunity where people want to get rid of it. But also at that point, there wouldn't be the drive to get rid of it because it wouldn't be a factor anymore.
Yeah. Because I know, I just hear people keep saying that, and it's not simple to do, just because you want it, just because you say it, and then we have, okay, so when, even at this time, at this election, when we have the caucuses, can you explain, I think so much relies on that. It's we're all watching that, but how valuable is that? And what if we didn't have that? Would that change anything?
It would change the process a lot. So we used to not have primary process. It used to be the parties would have their conventions. So the conventions used to be a lot more important than they are now. This year we're still going to have them. The Democrats will be in Chicago. The Republicans will be in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
but they already know.
Hopefully that will go smoothly.
Right, but in both cases, they already know who the nominee is. They already know. By then, they'll already know who the vice presidential nominee is for the Republicans. There's not going to be a lot decided there. Let's make the platform official. The last time the Republican Party didn't even put out a platform in 2020. But also, the convention was remote from COVID, so maybe this year they would do one, put together a platform. So there'd be there'll be some work done and some organizing, and it also generates enthusiasm. It gets on TV, and people get to see the candidates speak in a one-on-one speech situation.
Yeah.
But the conventions themselves aren't that important anymore, whereas it used to be. That's where delegates got together for each party.
It was interesting because, sometimes there were surprises, years ago, we have a surprise every single day that we're listening to any news now. That's the thing, and people by now, since the last election, people have never stopped talking about it. I remember the time when they, it was just 2 years before that where they would start talking about it. but it's an everyday discussion. And by this time now, people, I don't know if they're listening, and that's the problem now. They don't, some people don't even care. And, you know, I'm hoping that the young people do care. The ones you talk to, hopefully they're going to want to vote. The young, you know, the ones that are in college. But, you know, I don't know. It's hard because they say they're undecided, you know, and some will decide later. And, you know, I don't know. It's kind of sad when you hear the numbers of people that don't really know what they want to do by now.
Well, people who are undecided, too, if you break into those numbers and the polling a little bit more detailed, you'll see a lot of them, they're undecided, but they're, you know, they're leaning 80% one way. They just haven't officially decided yet. There's something the other candidate could still do that would win them back or win them over. But there's also fewer undecideds now. There's more independents. Like one of the things you saw a lot in the Republican primary this year is that Trump's popularity among registered Republicans is still very, very high. But the number of registered Republicans has decreased really dramatically under him. So a lot of people who were Republicans are now independent, and they would still generally like agree with Republican policies, but they're not going to be a member while he's the nominee. So they'll probably vote for like a Republican member of Congress or a Republican mayor or governor, but aren't going to vote for him. So they'll list themselves independent.
So
you see like the Republican Party now is down to like, I want to say, don't quote me on the exact statistic, but it's like just over a quarter of registered voters. It's got a very, like 28%.
Yeah.
So it's kind of very small, but that 28% very much likes him. And so that's where you saw like Nikki Haley was doing well with a lot of independents. Well, a lot of those independents are really Republicans. They're just Republicans who don't want to be part of Trump. So if Nikki Haley had become the nominee, they probably would become Republicans again, or would 4 years from now or 8 years from now, or someone like her.
Yeah, and there was a time, we didn't talk about it, you know, we didn't really discuss it much. We went to vote. We probably talked about issues and things with our friends, but we didn't really, you know, now it becomes at a dinner table, people are just beside themselves. They can't, I've heard that some people can't even go to their families for dinner, you know, as far as holidays. And it's so sad what has happened because it is what has become, you know, politics, it's always a subject, but now it's become like a breakthrough. No family. I mean, it's like now you now see that people in the family, they're split sometimes. So then nobody wants to, if either they don't talk about it at all and everybody's pent up and the energy in the room is not good because you know people are like they're trying not to say anything. You know, and I've been in situations myself where some people will just go downstairs in another room. They know what the majority of people in that room is who they're voting for, and they're not voting for that person, so they leave quietly. And all of a sudden you go, well, where's such and such? And they're gone because they don't want the confrontation because it becomes one, you know, because each side wants to pretend that their side, they think, and we hope, let's put it that way, that the side we're on is going to win. And they've lost friendships, a lot of people.
Right, but part of the problem over the last, like, 20, 25 years is the way in which people talk about politics and party affiliation has become less a data point and more like being a sports team follower. So you'll see, you saw this a lot during, like, I mean, at this point, this is now the third election involving Donald Trump, but in all three of those, on the Republican side, you saw people, you know, on a dime change political positions they'd held for years because he came out on a different side. And so people who were his supporters could have been, you know, in favor of low tariff trade their entire life, he decides he wants to start a trade war, and suddenly they're in favor of high tariffs. So it's not that necessarily that they change their opinion based on like data or based on experience of what's happening around them, but it was just that like team sport approach. It's like, well, the same way you root for whatever player is on your team, whether you like them before them when they're on another team or not. People think of it that way instead of thinking about like what are the goals this person's trying to do. Do I like these policies? You can still, you know, you can like a person and only like 90% of their policies or 60% of their policies, or vice versa.
Well, pretty
much. Occasionally they do something you like.
Yeah, pretty much this time it's going to be on a lot of the policies and a lot of the things that, you know, people feel about some of the laws, you know, and they want to change things. So I think there's going to be a lot of that. I want to talk about fundraising. You know, it's there's so much money involved in this.
Yeah.
And how, I mean, look at the people that probably could be good presidents, good vice presidents, good, you know, senators. They don't have money. And that's really kind of sad when you think about it, because they just can't raise the funds to even the some of the people to be on the stage for, you know, debates. They couldn't raise the money. And that's kind of sad. They have a campaign. They want to win, but they can't go on the stage because they didn't have a certain amount of money. So how is that?
Well,
so why did it become this way? So, I mean, so much money is out there.
Well, some of the Supreme Court decisions that have basically lifted caps made it so that candidates can form these super PACs where the candidate isn't allowed to directly work with them, but there's a lot of ways to indirectly work with them. So, yeah, candidate A says publicly they really like this ad someone put together. The person from the super PAC can listen to that and make decisions based on it without the candidate having to call them and say, I really like that ad. But there's a lot of unofficial coordination that can happen. But that's just allowed massive amounts of money to come through. The Supreme Court decision that made it so that you can donate unlimited money to super PACs also without necessarily disclosing who you are. So a lot of times we don't know who those donors are. Whereas for like the kind of standard donation to a candidate, if you give money to a candidate, like that's registered. It's only allowed to give up to a certain limit. And people can find out like, who you gave money to. But these kind of outside groups can go around.
This is the first time I can remember that I'm getting tons of emails from both sides wanting me to donate money. And I'm sure people do. And how do people know that these are even real? I mean, you know, there's so much going on now with identity and some, you know, there's so many problems, and let alone you're getting these I don't remember ever getting so many of these. Have you noticed the increase in? Yeah.
I mean, it definitely increases around the general election that happened in 2022, but it's also, I mean, it's general best practices for people. You're better off always, if you want to donate, just contacting the campaign directly or donating to them either through their website or through their local office instead of going through a link that you don't know what it is. Just be safe.
Exactly. No, I agree, because, you know, when you click a link or you go in and, you know, you send money, you don't even know where it's going, you know. So I think people have to really be aware of those kind of things that could happen now, because I'm just every day, there's just, you know, candidate over candidate, and, you know, and it doesn't matter which side, they're just all out there, you know, and they're see, that's the thing. Everybody now, people like go, like, oh, I'm like on Facebook. Okay. People are saying, oh, you know, you're getting hacked. I hear this constantly. I tried to do a new page, and people are going like, oh, you're hacking. Is this you? I go, yes, this is me. I'm trying to start a new page. So I just wanted to ask you your opinion of this, because people are scared, and they keep thinking everybody's hacking them. And I keep thinking, no, they're not hacking you. I don't know what that is, though. Then why is it that people keep thinking that if you ask for to be a friend of someone, are you being hacked, or is that, because I don't know if that's true or not, and I wonder what your opinion of that is, because it's constantly, and people don't know if they should even get involved with a person if it's someone they knew and if they had a new page. You know, I mean, I see this constantly. How do you think this is all happening? People are so scared now of everything.
On the social media front?
Can they hack you that way? Yes.
I mean, people's social media pages do get hacked, but that's, like, whether a friend request is from someone who's hacked or not, it depends on the individual situation.
Are they getting hacked? What are they do? What does that exactly mean to people? They're going, oh, you're hacked. But what does that exactly mean?
I mean, they generally mean someone got their password and logged into their account.
That's so weird to be able to do that. I don't even know if that, you know, I can't, you know, I have my own issues, as you know. I have like a lot of Facebook pages. I'm wondering how they could figure it out when I can't even get in some of my pages. You know, because Facebook has done that. You know, you're seeing that, you know, a lot of people are getting taken off Facebook because of messages, because of politics. You know, there's so much now that people are afraid of. They don't want to do any, you know, they're scared of everything. you know, they think someone's going to take their identity, but I think you can, people are out there everywhere trying that. It's not just on Facebook, right? I mean, they're just doing this to people and making them nervous. I know a lot of people that are scared stiff.
I mean, that's online in general. I don't know the specifics.
In other words, so then if they get these messages, don't click anything that you don't know is basically what I'm getting to, because I know people are afraid, and even if they think they know what this is, maybe they shouldn't even open it for voting, you know, to giving money to people.
But again, for giving money, if there's a candidate you like, you can probably just go to their website and give them money. You don't
right.
have, you don't have
but
to interact
with
emails.
A lot of people do have issues,
like,
so I wonder what – right. So, all right. So if they get – if they have these issues, ignore it, basically. Is that what we should do? I mean, I think that's what I've been doing lately, because I don't know what to do anymore. I'm not even going to open it, you know.
I mean,
so I'm thinking
ignoring
people out there
mails
listening
is good advice across the board. But
is what?
To say ignoring direct mail is just a good idea in general, not even for hacking purposes, just a lot of it's going to be spam.
Yeah.
But also, again, if there's a candidate you like, you don't have to get an email for them to give them money. You can just give them money
right.
through their website
okay.
or call their office.
So if people are listening out there, just listen to this and just find out where you can donate at a reputable place or – you know,
go to their website directly instead of going through a link.
Yeah, directly. Yeah.
Just Google them.
It's going to be tough,
yeah.
You know. And I, you know, all right. So, I wanted to ask about the Supreme Court. People, you know, there's so many issues now, and everything is going. They want everything to go to the Supreme Court, and people are going like, "Oh, Ruth Bader, she should have. You know, they should have." Just let her go earlier, and you know, I mean, nobody actually knows when someone is going to die.
Well, it's also it's up,
I mean,
it's up to her.
Yes, she could have.
Yeah, she could have chosen to retire earlier, but it's not like someone could make her retire earlier.
But you know, because this is what is on people's minds now, because people, there's a lot of people in politics that are over 70.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Everybody's, you know, and I don't think that, you know, because I'm always looking people up, go, how old is this one or that one? I do, and they're older. But that doesn't mean they don't know what they're doing. So this is what's happened as far as election goes. I mean, a lot of people are leaving, you know, the Republican Party, whatever. They're just leaving, you know, and I think
a lot of people have been leaving lately are young. A lot of people who are leaving lately are
that's
young.
That's the thing.
I mean, Mike Gallagher's younger than me. He just left Congress.
Yeah.
And he'd been a rising star.
So I think there's such a problem. And now age discrimination becomes an issue, you know. And I think whereas people, you know, they didn't exactly care many years ago because we had everybody was younger, I think. But now there's a lot of people that are over 70 in Congress everywhere. You know, and so I think that people have to just not only, because sometimes there is wisdom in age.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think this is going to play out now?
Also, age is one demographic factor. So with anybody, you can be old and competent, you can be old and not competent. You can be old and smart, you can be old and dumb. You can be old and a good person, you can be old and a bad person. Like age is a factor. It doesn't make you good or bad. The same way, like a young candidate, you know, some people say, like, oh, they're all too inexperienced. There's some young candidates who are very good. There's some young candidates who aren't, like, not because of their age.
Right. But, I mean, look what happened
with
Hillary. They go, oh, Hillary was sick. They had all these news, you know, every report showed her in all the magazines that she was barely living. And she was just going to die. And she didn't. Okay, well, many years later.
In tabloids, to be fair.
But people read those, you know, in the grocery store, whatever. But also, you know, then she had a series on Apple with her daughter, and they were trying adventure after adventure. And I'm thinking to myself, look at this. I mean, why don't they show her when she's doing all this, you know, and Biden, you know, he does exercise all the time. He's on a bike. You know, I'm not saying I'm going on a bike. I've never been a good bike. But, you know, I think that people have – this is – they're concentrating on some of the wrong things, not the right things. So how do you think this election is going to play out? Is it really going to be about age, or is it going to be about policy?
Well, at this point, I don't think it can be about age because it's two old men. So had,
yes, but
right. Right, but had like had Governor Haley won the Republican nomination, age might have been more of a factor in the general election because there would be a generational
yes.
difference.
Right,
there'd be an 80-year-old candidate against a woman in her 50s. But like, you have two people who are separated by a couple of years.
That's only
we're both
a
older
few years.
Than presidents.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, but yeah, that's all everybody talks about. So I think that maybe they should look at policy and what's going to happen instead of worrying about – because they are, regardless of what anybody says, they're running. They are the two right now that
right.
are the choices.
Well, and if you're concerned about age, like the vice president matters. Because if
yes.
there were – and again, like presidents could leave the job at any age. But if the
yes.
vice president needed to take over, the decision process of how the president picks the vice president tells you some of their judgment too.
Yeah. Now, do you ever talk about – do people ask about third party?
And people do.
And how would that it's, ruin the election for – or just change – like I said, I shouldn't say ruin the election, but say change the election.
It also depends on what the third party is, who the third party candidate is, what they're trying to do. I think one of the problems third parties in America has – and I've talked to students about this before, I talked about this in the book, is so right now like the biggest third party in America is the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party has never elected a senator, has never elected a president. And
mm-hmm.
I think one of the mistakes they make, like if I were giving them free advice, what I would tell them is instead of focusing all the time on the presidential election, like run more, focus on running candidates for like House seats. Try to get a couple people elected to the U.S. Congress. Like try to build a party. Because instead what winds up happening is they put all their focus on these presidential elections, which they're not going to win. So either they're wasting a bunch of time and money. They're getting – sometimes they can get an issue into the debate. Like Ross Perot really got like a lot of the talk of the budget deficit in 1992 came from his
yeah.
role as a third-party candidate. So he was able to get
right.
Both the time President Bush and then future President Clinton to talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
So like that can happen. You can influence an issue. But otherwise, often they'll wind up taking votes from the candidate who is more like them. And actually hurting the candidate whose policies they would like more than the other candidate.
Right.
Now, a lot of times third-party candidates don't have
yeah.
a party. They're just running as a person.
Yeah.
Like Ross Perot made a party around himself called the Reform Party. But the first time he
yeah.
ran, he was just an independent candidate. When he ran 4 years later, he was the head of the small party called the Reform Party.
And he could support his own campaign with money. But now
right.
the campaigns are so much money. I mean, to put in your, I mean, the, you know, there are 50 million, 100 million, you know, there's so much
well,
in the TV commercials and all of that.
Running a successful campaign is expensive. Running a campaign is not that expensive.
Right.
Like if
but
you're trying to win.
Unfortunately, if they
don't
have the money, then people don't get out there. They can't, they don't even know what,
right.
they don't know them. They, you know, it costs
right, but,
so much
but
money.
But if you look at the presidential, right, if you look at the presidential primary ballot in almost every state, there'll be names you'll look at, like, I've never seen that name before. And it's a smaller local third party run. But those aren't big money campaigns.
Yeah.
So if it's something like Robert,
I think people
Robert
now
Jr.,
know more
like,
names.
He has a lot of money.
I think people really know more names, you know, name recognition than they ever did. You know, I think
yeah.
Because a lot of them that we've never seen before are now out there on the stations, you know, depending whatever station, or they're at podcasts, you know. So you're hearing names that people never really heard before because they didn't. But there's a lot of people out there talking, and sometimes I think, well, why aren't they running? You know, and then the money situation
yeah.
comes in because they don't have the money behind them because they may be a really good candidate and really smart.
Right, but they can also work the ladder. So if you're
yeah.
a candidate starting out, you can run for a smaller office, win that smaller
yeah.
office, get a following, get popular, and then like, you become a bigger candidate as you get into like a Senate race or a House race or presidential race.
Yeah.
Like you build up a career. Too many people try to skip the steps. Like, I'm going to run for
right.
president based on my experience in business. Like, well, you should run for Congress.
Right.
you should run for your state legislature. And then use that experience to like work your way up so you know what you're talking about, you know how to do things, you know what, how issues actually are, and they're not simple black and white. Very few issues are black and white and easy. Like the reason why a lot of things involve compromise is because you can't get them done without compromise.
Right.
So it's
like
easy to sit there
COVID,
and say, like, I'm going to do X. Go ahead.
You know, during COVID, like you'd see all these people on, you know, that were governors, you know, making really tough decisions and good decisions on a lot of, you know, in a lot of states. And they were working really hard in COVID. And so that they, you know, they got out there and then sometimes you go, oh, this guy should probably run for president.
Yeah.
And then then they're gone. We don't see them now. But, you know, maybe later on. Because I think right now it's going to be a tough time. So I think nobody wants to be in this one. That doesn't mean that they won't be the next time. But this one is a tough one because there's a lot going on right now.
Well, but on that front, there are a lot of Democratic governors who four years ago during COVID like became stars from like the way they handled policy.
Right.
And so, but they weren't going to run against an incumbent president. So those are the people you're going to see running 4 years from now. So people like, and I don't know which one, I'm not thinking any of these particular people are going to run, but people like, whether it's Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan or Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania or Gavin Newsom in California or J.B. Pritzker in Illinois, like those people have become like the next generation of Democratic rising stars. But none of them was going to run in a race they knew they were going to lose against an incumbent president.
Right. And, you know, I mean, there's just so many different changes, you know, and I'm sure this is one reason why, you know, your books, because, I mean, you really, like, you want to talk a little about why people have to know, I mean, you know, how, I've called you many times in the past and asked you, how do you choose, like, judges? And, you know, because a lot of people say, oh, I didn't vote for judges because I don't know who they are. So how can they find out about judges so they can decide and not just not vote? Because I've heard people say that. They go, well, I just didn't vote for them. But that matters. A no vote is a vote for somebody else.
Yeah, so one resource that I recommend to a lot of people is a website called Ballotpedia.
Mm-hmm.
So as if it's Ballot Encyclopedia merged together, Ballotpedia.
Oh,
but they will show you can look up you can look up your sample ballot based on where you live. So it'll tell you like what races you have to vote on, who's running in those races. For many of the races, people will fill out surveys for them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also like then Google those people if you know like, oh, my judge race is between, you know, Bob X and Janet Y. I could Google those two people and see like what's their background, what have they done so far, what's their experience, what major decisions have they ruled on or represented in court. Do I agree or disagree with what they did? For judges, also, there are some more objective things like the American Bar Association will just list them as either qualified or unqualified.
Right.
These ones, generally, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're saying every one of them is great, but they'll tell you who's not qualified. But among the qualified candidates, you can also look up, like, which one of these two do I like more, and based on their answers to questions or based on their judicial philosophy. You can just look them up and find out the information. The same with any office.
Yeah.
Like they all have campaign websites.
Yeah.
They all have campaign social media. Like you can also see like what they say about themselves.
Because it does matter, because we see now more than ever before how important it is who the judges are. That nobody seems to care about now needs to care, because you want to see what their policies are, because if they don't align with yours, then you really shouldn't be voting for them or leaving them in office, because that's what happens. You go like, oh, he's in office, she's in office, oh, we'll just leave him there.
and
people do that.
And that's in the states where you're allowed to vote for judges, which is not every state. Some states are appointed, some states are on ballot, some states you get to just like yay or nay, keep them or replace them. You don't get to pick them from a group. And then obviously for federal judges, they get appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate. Supreme Court gets appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate. So you don't get to vote for them. But that's also something to think about when you're voting for
president. Right, exactly. When you go to vote for the president. So, and then there's the case that people say, they go, okay, I'm going to vote, but I'm not going to vote for president. Now, that's when that is a bad thing. Because according to what we're just talking about, if you don't vote for the president, then you may not have any of the things or the judges that would be in favor of things you want.
Right. And again,
if you don't vote for the
live,
president,
you,
yeah.
Right.
Well, Illinois is different.
Illinois. Right, right. But because of the Electoral College, it's state by state, again, like if you're a Democrat in Wyoming or a Republican in Vermont, it kind of doesn't matter if you vote for president or not. You still do it. But what happens a lot of times
See,
is because
they,
people
– on TV, they're
are,
talking for everybody. They go, okay, vote. They say, you know, abortion, vote. Vote for this, vote for that, for this – you know. And
mm-hmm.
so a lot of states, they don't have – do they not have the judges – the judges are on there, right? I mean, or they're not if they're just appointed. So
if they're
how do the people
if they're
decide
they're
then?
On the ballot. Right. If, yeah. If they're,
right.
if they're not, if
Which
they're appointed
that,
in that state, they're on the ballot.
Are there other judges on the ballot then for people?
What do you mean?
None? Well, like if you're in another state, like we have judges.
Oh, if you're in a state that doesn't elect judges, they're not on the ballot. If you're in a state that does, they are on the ballot.
Well, that's, you know, because oh, that's what you hear on them saying like, oh, vote. Vote for your judges, but if you don't have any, so now that you're saying that, then people have to realize they better figure out who they're voting for as president and not skip voting for president.
Well, but also on issues, you're also voting for your member of Congress. So if there's a, you know, the Supreme Court makes a decision you don't like, Congress can pass a new law. At least you're voting for your member
right.
of Congress.
See, these are all
Senate.
Things that people just thought would go, right. you know, would just come naturally in the, you know, we didn't have this many arguments as we are having right now. And that's why a lot of people, you know, which unfortunately isn't the answer, they go, oh, I'm just not going to listen to the news anymore. Well, I don't know that that's the answer. Do you hear that? I hear that a lot.
But it's not as if there's more than there's ever been. I mean, we went through, you know, literally
is that
went through the Civil War.
I mean,
Civil
that
rights,
is true.
The Civil Rights Movement, we went through the Vietnam War. Like, there's always been times where
yeah.
things become very heated. We currently live in a world where there's 24-hour news and there's 24-hour social media and there's massive misinformation and disinformation in social media. So like, there's more.
So when
it's
you
like
talk to kids,
all the time
do they? When you're talking to kids, how do they feel about this?
So a lot of young voters don't know different because they were so young the last time things were quote unquote normal.
Right. Right.
So the last
right.
like, the last traditional election where like both candidates were running on like a platform that they clearly stated. That had experience
right.
was 2012.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a first-time
right.
voter
it's
now,
a whole different, right? Yeah.
Yeah. You were probably too little to be paying attention, or you like kind of
right.
knew who the president was.
Right.
Unless you were nervous.
Yeah.
But.
So this could be a first time yeah. for a lot of these kids voting.
Right. Yes. Every time, and this is a large generation that's voting for the first time. What's been one thing that's been good to see, especially talking to someone who like writes for and talks to young people, is that in both the 2022 midterm and the 2018 midterm, youth turnout was higher than has ever been for youth in those elections for midterms. So there's like there's more engagement, there's more people showing up. It's still a low number; it still has a lot of room to improve. But there was this myth for a long time, like young people never vote in midterms, but they're starting to. So there's some upward momentum there. Because people are realizing.
So how do what do parents say to their children? You know, like that's why your book is a very interesting mm-hmm. thing for adults to read. And then
mm-hmm.
because a lot of adults now are looking at the books that their children
yeah.
read. So
mm-hmm.
what that would be a good audience for you also, because a lot of
yeah.
parents don't talk about this and kids are curious. And they want to know,
I mean,
but if their kids, parents never talk about it.
Well, like one of the last chapter in the book is for young people, if they want to get involved themselves, how to do that. And so giving them ideas of, like, you can also run, once you're 18, you can run for office in a lot of places. I mean,
there are a lot of young,
yeah.
there's very young, right, there's a lot of younger people. But,
yeah.
I, you know, as parents,
yeah, like,
I think they, you know, that would be nice if they could have a family discussion. You know, families are trying to get together more now. So I think that would be a good way for parents to introduce politics to their children in a easier way, or just saying to them, oh, you vote this way, you know, because kids are curious. They would want to know. So in a book like yours, if the parents read the book and then said, listen, this is a really good book. So you can learn when it's your time to vote. You'll understand some of the things that we may not have discussed in our house. Unfortunately,
well,
in a lot of houses,
there's also this idea going around right now that, like, we're more divided than we've ever been, which isn't true, and that people are, like, so in their camps, and there's definitely the people who, like, watch Fox News all day are definitely not going to change their opinions. But, like, there's still a ton of elections, if you go up and down the ballots last few years, where people flip their tickets.
Yeah.
So if you look at, like, 2020, there were a ton of, like, we were just talking about earlier about how many Republicans left the party over Trump and became independents. They still didn't leave the policy positions that they hold. So there were a lot of people who voted for President Biden, but also voted for the Republican senator, the Republican member of Congress. So the Democrats actually lost seats in the House that election, even though President Biden won by a pretty big margin. Democrats lost seats because a lot of people who were voting for Biden were voting for a Republican congressman or congresswoman.
Yeah. So there's so much to learn for people that you know, would help these kids understand what they're really voting for. Because sometimes, you know, you don't, you know, I mean, if it is their first time voting, it would be nice if they could discuss this so the kids could understand more about it.
Well, and also
or
a lot
not
of times
vote,
the parents
or not vote, because they don't understand.
Right, but also a lot of times the parents don't know. Or they one thing I've learned in talking to people about elections the last 8 years now is, like, there are a lot of things adults don't know or don't understand or just believe a thing they want to believe regardless of whether or not it's true. And so it's good for kids to also get civics education.
That's what I think. That's why I think this is good for all ages, your book, because it's put in the right order of what you need to know, and it's not 500 pages. So like you're saying, it's a text within the the type of book it is. It's, you feel like you're learning as you're reading it, but it's not like you're reading a textbook that is boring.
Right.
This
right.
is, it's really a good book for adults, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the market.
I try to include a lot of stories, a lot of fun facts, a lot of that stuff.
Yes. You know, and I think people do want to know. I think, you know, they're very confused, I think, more than ever. You know, what would you like to tell people about, and what have we missed that you'd like to talk about as far as voting and what they should know that we didn't talk about?
I'd say one thing, especially for young people, but really for all Americans, is because voter suppression has been such a problem and it's continuing to be a problem, even if you've registered to vote in the past, your registration may not be current. So a lot of states that have passed rules against voting or rules to make it harder to vote may have taken you off the voting rolls and not told you. So make sure you're voter registration.
Wow.
Yes, make sure your voter registration is up to date. I'd say that for everybody is just check with your Secretary of State's office of your state. Make sure you're registered at the right address. Make sure you know where your polling place is. If you're voting in a primary, make sure you're registered in time for that primary. Because even though presidential primaries have happened, a lot of states divide their presidential primary from their other primaries. So a lot of states that have already voted for their presidential nominee have not yet voted for their House primaries or their Senate primary or their governor primary, whatever else is coming up. So a lot of those are going to be happening this summer. Even if you showed up in the spring to vote for president, your primary for the other offices is going to be coming up. So make sure you know that calendar, because that's still going to decide who's running in November. And wherever you are on the spectrum, like, there are going to be multiple candidates running for each of those offices. So you could have someone who's, like, further in one direction than another, someone who's more experienced than another, someone who's just more competent than another within your own party.
Yeah.
And so making sure that you participate in primaries too, so that your party has the person who would be the best at that job.
Right.
Especially in a state that's either very red or very blue, the primary can be more important than the general election.
Right. See, that's good. I mean, these are all good things to know, because I think, you know, we learned, a lot of us learned it, but we just kind of listened to the TV and we're just, you know, and I do think it's really sad that people aren't going to vote. So that's why I am hoping, you know, if you listen to this show and you have some friends that don't really think they're going to vote, maybe if you get them a copy of this book, I think they can see how important it is that we get what we want, you know, rather than after the election say, you know, I don't think this is right, and you're a person that didn't vote, then we get that. It's a wonderful thing to have the knowledge that we can vote and make the choice. Other countries can't. So I think, above all, America is the best place to be. And, you know, as you know, I did a Holocaust story, which you edited to life, and I know – she's gone now, Sala, but her most important day was when she could vote. she was and became a citizen. She was so, and she never, ever forgot that. So I think everybody out there that's listening, thinking that, oh, you know, when people come to this country and they are registered voters, they are so happy that they can vote. And we're, sometimes people forget that we live here, but people that didn't live here, that came here and have the opportunity to choose who our leaders are, I think this is the most wonderful thing. That's why it's so important to vote.
You know, I think we sometimes forget that like when we created the Office of President with George Washington, that was really the first time in a large country where the leader wasn't either a dictator or a military commander or like the king. The king was the leader because his dad was the leader.
Right.
But the idea that someone was selected that way to be, it was the first time in a long time in a large country where that was a thing. And now, of course, that idea has spread to many other countries.
Right.
But like, that was really unusual at the time. Or like the what they call the Revolution of 1800, but the idea that Thomas Jefferson beat John Adams in an election, being the opposition party was elected, and there was a peaceful transfer of power, no one tried to overthrow the government, no one stormed the Capitol. John Adams worked with Jefferson
right,
on the transition.
We have a lot to hope
that
doesn't happen.
That's how
this
things
year.
Are supposed to work.
You know.
Yeah.
Right. We do not want any of that again. Ever again, because this is our country. And the White House is a special place to be. It is the White House.
But we were one of the first countries that could do that. That could have the opposition win an election, take over, and the other party didn't like fight about like try to still influence Congress and still pass things that would like meet their goals and work together and try to. I mean, ideally, most legislation should have some compromise to it.
Yeah, and this country has had its share of problems in the last few years, you know, several years, and hopefully, we can have a peaceful transfer of power, or if Biden will still win, it will be okay, because we do not. There are so many things in this country that are wonderful. We do not want our liberties, everything. You know, that's why more than ever, all of this matters. We all took for granted that we're going to be this country forever. But we are in danger now of not being this country forever. So I think that this is the most important time to vote. Which whoever you vote for, we're not telling you who to vote for, but just vote. You have the privilege. It's a privilege to be able to vote. Like you just like all these other countries, they don't have that privilege. Some of them. And then, you know, we are the United States of America, and that's what we should always be, the strong place to live. You know, that's how I look at it, in my opinion. So, I mean, I'm hoping kids will vote, younger ones will vote, that you know, this is their first election to vote. It's going to be a little tough, but it's important. And it's important that the parents, you know, make sure that their kids understand. So that's why I feel that this book is for all ages. So I think you've done a great job with this book, because we need it more than ever.
Well, it's also now easier to register than it has been a lot in the past. Because of a lot of the problems that have come up, like during COVID, we had to expand voting by mail because it wasn't safe to vote in person.
Right.
Or early voting. Right. Like, we have a lot more options now and a lot more tools in our toolkit than we used to have. Because now we know how to run an election by mail. We know how to run an election by early voting. So states can expand voting in a lot of different ways, and some have. Some are doing automatic registration like we do in Illinois. Illinois has an option where you can get a permanent mail ballot if you want to. Like, states are doing more and more options. So there's a lot of ways to get involved, and people just have to like look into it, make sure they're registered, make sure the registration is current, they haven't kicked off the rolls, and decide, like, figure out when all their primaries are going to be coming up, look at their sample ballots, and just know in advance, like, do a little bit of research, see who you like, who you don't like, and why. Like, not just from slogans, not just from, like, are they funny on TV, are they somebody you want to have a drink with, but, like, their policy positions, their track record, like, have they... You know, they say a lot of good things. Have they accomplished any of them? Have they introduced legislation? They say they're going to vote for this, but they voted against it the last six times. Like, looking at that kind of information, seeing, like, is this person reliable?
Right.
Do they have good ideas? Look at the judgment of the kind of people they put around them. Because those are the kind of people they're going to appoint to offices.
Right. I think we've all been through a lot, the older adults, you know, and mm-hmm. we, that's why we have to remember how important all of this is, and our children, grandchildren, how important voting is and how important our rights are. So I think that, you know, by going to vote and understanding, right, it is easier. Now, you can go online and try to find out a lot of different things, which is really good for people, you know. I think that it's easier to find out information. I mean, I find myself looking up a lot of things that, you know, we're lucky we have the phones and things like that because we can find information very fast.
Right. The downside is you can also find misinformation and disinformation very fast.
Yes,
and a lot
I
of
after I said
through social
too,
media
right.
and the tweet.
Because that's
but,
true. Right.
But if you look for things genuinely and not, you know, I'm doing my own research and trying to find the answer you already want. But if you're trying to look for like genuine questions, you want to look up somebody, you can like look at their website and see what their positions are that they say their positions are. And then you can look up like their votes on things. Like every member of Congress's voting record is online. Through the House of Representatives and the Senate. Like you can look those things up through reliable sources. You can look up like good newspapers and see what they report on and not just have like whatever person is sending stuff through Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. You know, like not that you shouldn't be on those things, but just take things with a grain of salt when things are thrown at
you. Well, that's the thing. That's the other thing. That's what I kind of alluding to that on Facebook because I think there's so much information out there that isn't good, and there are, we say hackers, but there are other people out there now that say they're from Meta Business, and they're not, and you have to just discard the email, because don't answer them, because it's, you know, they said your page is going to come down, you know, there's a lot of things out there that people don't understand, so if you don't understand it, maybe ask a friend what that means, but don't just start clicking, and It's a dangerous place out there. I mean, social media didn't start out this way, but it is now. I remember what you said years ago. What was Facebook really for? You've mentioned this to me many times.
Oh, the original idea of Facebook was like a date rating site for Harvard University, and then it became a way to like connect with people in your class.
Right.
It wasn't supposed to be.
And now it has
massive,
become.
Yeah.
Yes, and now it could be tough out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't belong to a lot of these pages, and I don't get in fights with people, but I know people are fighting with people, and the political season is now. So if you think you don't like what you see, don't respond, don't get in a fight, don't add a comment, just move on. I think people have to learn how to move on rather than just add, you know, because what you're saying is what it's turned into is not what it was. Because I remember what I always remember what you said, and you're right. It wasn't supposed to be
now,
like
but now
but it is
now it's
like
a business site.
Yes, and but
also just don't believe everything you read online and don't believe everything
exactly.
you see from, like, be aware of the source when you see something.
Yes.
And,
you know, if you have
a difference between, I'll say there's an important difference, is there's a difference between a difference of opinion and a difference of fact.
Yeah.
You know, if it rained yesterday, you can be upset that it rained. You can be happy that it rained. You know, you can be a farmer who needed the rain for your crops. You can be someone who's playing a little baseball game that got rained out. You have different opinions about the fact. But people who are telling you things that are not facts, you should be suspicious of them.
Right.
And you don't just assume, like, because you want something to be true, that it's a fact.
Right.
Yeah.
I know, because those
and
are the issues
around.
you always talked about those forever. I mean, this isn't just now. You've always felt that way.
But
what are the facts?
Again, if you're looking at a real news organization, they are trying to get you good information every day. It doesn't mean they don't make mistakes. Like, you know, you're trying to hit a deadline by 6 o'clock. You may not have gotten every person you need to talk to yet. But when there's a mistake, they correct it. You'll see a correction. They don't continue repeating the same mistake over and over and over and over.
No, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. So, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, people will, you know, pay attention to what we've said today, because what your book is about how we can keep this country a democracy, because we are voting and we should understand why we're voting and how to do it right and how to get the right people in office.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we don't want. We don't want people that will not keep America safe. It's about America. This is what we are now. It's about America, I think, you know. And so whoever you're voting for, just make sure that's what you want. If you're not happy with their policies, then don't vote for them. Vote for the person that will give you what you need, America.
Well, but then also in any specific race, whether it's a House race or a governor's race or whatever it is,
yes,
you're also never going to find a candidate you, unless you are in a cult, you're never going to find a candidate you agree with 100% of the time.
Right.
Like,
but
almost everyone.
It's like anything else.
Even the candidates,
your friends, you don't always agree either. And, you know, that's the thing.
I mean, I agree with yourself from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Everyone disagrees with themselves from 10 years ago on some things. What you're looking for is the person who is the best combination of things. And so if there's, you know.
That's right.
So, you know, I like this. I generally agree with 60% of what this person says, but I really hate this 10%. Well, that's going to be better than the person you disagree with on 80% of things.
Yeah.
And so it's important to not to let the phrase you hear is like, don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. Oh, like,
and I have your link on the page, you know, jeffleisher.com. And where can they find – are you going to be doing some signings probably in next year, you know, after the summer, a few places?
Yeah, I've got one already set up for October 1st at 57th Street Books, which is actually not for this book. It's for another book that's coming out on October 1st, which is coincidentally President Carter's 100th birthday. It's a book called Civic Minded. and Civic Minded is a – Well, what this book is about voting in elections, Civic Mind is about policy. So it's, again, for the same kind of like young adult and up audience, but explains things the government does.
It's a really important
government
audience.
Responds to. Yeah, so
it's
that one talks about things
audience.
Like what is Social Security, what are Medicare and Medicaid, and how are they different? What are the debt and the deficit, how are they different? What can the government do about inflation? Is Social Security going to be available in the future?
And when is
and
that
even
coming
smaller
out?
Things like when? How are the October 1st.
Okay, so we should have a show about that, too, because those are interesting topics.
Sure.
I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, what your path that you've chosen, I mean, you do write fiction, but the path you've chosen are really important issues because they always matter to you. This isn't just one day. I mean, you know, you didn't just say, oh, I'm going to do this because it's a fad. No, you do this because this is who you are. You've always cared about these things.
Well, it's also things that I used to cover a lot as a reporter, found out where the gaps were, and then figured out if there's gaps for adults, there's also gaps for young adults. And so the more young adults can at least like know what they're talking about.
Yes.
And so they can
and
make
I
informed
think,
decisions.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the path you've chosen is a good one. And when you go speak, you know, a lot of times I'm hoping there'll be more places open that we can do, you know, you can do some more signings than just be out there. You know, a lot of these places, it's not easy to sign. They don't want to have a lot of, you know, functions that they used to have, but they should. You know, maybe it'll change. COVID did change that. You know, a lot of people don't, you know, they don't want to offer it anymore. But maybe it'll change now for the best, where people will, again, be out more places.
Yes, I will have more stuff coming up. I just don't have dates for everything yet, except the October 1st.
Okay, fine. So we'll have the
and then also have some more stuff.
You know, and you do have other, you know, do you want to just mention... You have other books before we...
Oh, sure. I have a fiction collection coming out on September 10th called Animal Husbandry. That'll be out September 10th. And I have a lot of existing books. I have one called The Hot Mess that explains climate change and not just the science behind it, but also like what impacts it has on the world, things like impacts on humans, on wildlife, on things like fire and floods and droughts, but also the history of it and the science behind it. That's been out for a couple of years. I also have a book called Rockin' the Boat, which is biographies of 50 revolutionaries throughout the world, throughout history. And that one's more like a kind of a fun history book. So there's chapters anybody from like Julius Caesar to Joan of Arc to Dr. King or Nelson Mandela. But it also covers a very wide swath
of history. Well, these are, you know, that's why the audience you have, they need to talk about these things and understand them. You know, this is important. This is important parts of life that during COVID, the kids didn't get to... you know, have a lot of discussions because they were at home, and it's a very different time now. So I think a lot of things that you write about are important. So I think now is the time, and I think I'm hoping that libraries and places open up to authors more than they've been doing. You know, we all know what happened with COVID.
But they are. I mean, there's more than there was.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's now Barnes & Noble, more of them opening. I think there's several in the suburbs coming up that they, you know, they took them down. They put other things in them, and just there's several. But now they're coming back, I think. So that's a good thing.
Mm.
Yeah, we need bookstores because I think a lot of people want books. You know, I think for a time nobody was buying a book, but I think I can see the trend changing a little. I do think people are holding books again. And they're reading it on their Kindles, but...
Well, there's also an excellent website called bookshop.org that allows you to order, if you want to order your books, either pre-orders or e-books, print books, but you want to order from a smaller store, and you can't go there physically. You can also order from your local bookstore via that site, bookshop.org.
Yeah.
So if you want to support your local bookstore, it's a great way to order books.
I'm writing that down. What's it called? Bookshop?
Bookshop.org. O-R-G.
Oh, okay.
So all my books are pre-order available there, as well as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target,
great.
Walmart, any of those places.
I think that that's the one thing people forget before we go, is that my books also are all over. It's not a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
I had them on Amazon, but now I'm going wide with most of them again. But I think all these places that, you know, unfortunately everybody thinks that, you know, they think about Amazon, but there are so many other places people can buy books. Kobo, I mean, there's just a ton of places now, you know, Barnes & Noble. You know, they just don't advertise as much as Amazon, but they're out there online. You know, I think people just think Amazon, but that's, you know, I think it's not the only place. There's so many others. So look around for people's books, because you would be surprised where they are. I'm even surprised sometimes when you see them at different places that we don't even know about. So, all right, bookshop.org. Got it. All right. Any last words?
I mean, thanks again for having me. I'm always happy to do it. And
yes, it's great. I think this was very helpful for people, and I think it's an important book to read. So get yourself a copy and read it, and then tell your grandchildren, tell your children, and let them understand how important this is this time. More than ever.
And if there's any librarians or teachers who would like me to do either a Zoom event or an in-person event, just let me know. Reach me through my website. We'll schedule a bunch of those.
It's on there? Okay. And if you want to reach Jeff, just let me know and I'll find him. I know exactly where he is. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. And I appreciate you coming on. All right. Have a great day, everybody.
Okay, sure.
I'll be on tomorrow with Amy Patricia Mead, and we'll be talking about Hollywood and movies and how important they are to our writing. And I love old movies, so we love that. All right. Take care. Have a great day. Bye.
Good talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.